my VIP tour of Xi Linh, Vietnam, November 1971. I will indicate the changing of frames with this sound. Frame number one. The day after Thanksgiving, I boarded this bus bound for Xi Linh, or Xi Linh, spelled D-I-L-I-N-H, in the central highlands of Vietnam, some 180 miles north of Saigon, near Da Lat, for you map searchers. This was my very first bus trip, or land trip, in Vietnam. Usually we have to go by air. These scenes from the bus will give you a glimpse of Vietnam, some of its natural beauty and scenic countryside. Here, a tea plantation with rubber trees in the background. Asians at the wheel of a car are something else. As we whizzed along, usually down the center of the highway, forcing other vehicles to the shoulder or careening through traffic gaps in a near miss, I tried to emulate this passenger because from my front seat I was having much too hair-raising a view. A banana plantation, plus a lone papaya tree, along with tea and rubber, abound in this particular area. Picking tea, for which this region is particularly noted. Rural farmland at the foothills of the Highland Range. The soil in Vietnam has a high percentage of clay and sand. Rice is a principal crop, used both for home consumption and exportation. Some vestiges of defoliation, about which you've heard. Some estimate the damage, though, may not be as permanently devastating as originally feared. Another rural home, and this beautiful scene near Matagui. Note the smoke in the background. A hamlet of thatched roof huts, and the smoke again. The Montagnards, the French word for mountain people, traditionally are a rather nomadic people who slash and burn, using up the lands, then moving on. Another view of Vietnam as seen from my bus window. The bus stops for refreshments. Actually, at 10 o'clock in the morning, is about the main mealtime for many Vietnamese. Here, vendors wait to serve the passengers. This stop was at Bao Lap. There were many beautiful flowers, and this is a typical December view, wouldn't you say? I was stretching my legs too, as these men are doing in this slide. There's an army engineering unit based quite near here. It was much in evidence along the section of road where they were completing bridges, such as this one, and building a major thoroughfare between Saigon and Da Lat. This one of the few remaining stretches is due for completion in a couple of months. Keeping lonely vigil, but alert for hostile action. This is slide 22. My Xi Linh destination, our VNCS unit, composed of two Methodist Western personnel, Phyllis Cribby, Grants Pass, Oregon, a nurse, and Reverend Terry Bonnet of Ohio. This serves as a combined office and dwelling for Phyllis. The office is downstairs. A portion of her house is too, but the office is in the front portion of the downstairs level. One of the Land Rovers, this one used by Phyllis in her public health work. I stood out front and I made the following street scenes several days in a row. Note particularly the Montagnards. They're a basket-carrying people, and I've tried to get several views of this. I was never quite happy with the ones I had. And then there's the new building across the way. This enterprise, a billiard parlor, which is one of the newest fads in Vietnam, they're springing up everywhere, was made possible through a small business loan from VNCS, one of the community development projects directed by Terry, which makes funds available to Montagnards for efforts such as this. The movie house across the street from Phyllis blares forth music and dialogue every night. Oh, it's terrible. Plus matinees on weekends. A rear view of the building, on the upper level is where Phyllis has her water tank. It's the second from the left there. And it's kept under lock and key. Still, it disappears. She tries desperately to hoard every drop. 6 months is a long, dry season. More engineers at work on the final section of roadway between Zilin and Delat. Completion date is set for February, but 2 days after I left, another mine was found in one of the gravel piles, and the U.S. engineers were just pulled out post-haste. This is not too good, but it's one of my best shots of the Montagnard women bent under loads in baskets on their back. The stick they carry stuck in the ground, and the packs are supported on it for brief rest periods. It's a common sight, and a typical costume of hand-woven skirts and bare feet. If you wait long enough, you'll see most anything walking down the street, even a Methodist preacher. This is Terry Bonnet, the VNCS unit leader in Zilin, and he is heading for home. Past the bus stop and depot here is the market. He doesn't like all this mud, but Phyllis abhors the red dust of the dry season. And this is his residence, shared with a Chinese family. With him here is Kun Yung, his interpreter assistant. And this is his water reservoir. This is Katu, a high school student who lives with Terry and attends school in Zilin. A Koho tribesman, his village is some distance away, and he is one of the Montagnard students receiving VNCS scholarship assistance of 1,000 piastres a month. It's just one phase of Terry's educational program. Most scholarships are given to those from more distant villages on a basis of need, and they pay for food, clothing, and rent. A scholarship committee consisting of 5 Montagnard teachers also checks on the progress of students who must maintain a good academic record to retain their scholarship. Montagnard high school students now number 200, and in 1968, there were less than 30. Guitars are big now. Cabru, another Coho, joins in, and gatherings at the house resound to native music. This provided the inspiration for a new special project now approved for funding, the preservation of folk music and legends. of the Coho tribe's people. This hilltop village is Jering. It's one of the oldest Montagnard villages in Vietnam, with a population of 4,000 before Vietnamese came to Xi Linh in 1954. It was during that period that then-President Diem integrated the highlands, relocating Chinese and Vietnamese, with the Vietnamese taking over the lands of the Montagnards. The Montagnards are rather primitive tribal people of an entirely different ethnic origin, Malayo-Polynesian, and they remind me of our American Indian in some ways, receiving second and third class citizenship treatment, however, of our Negro countrymen. So you can picture their plight. This is slide 37. Another VNCS-sponsored educational project is this literacy school in Gojong Village. The building was bombed in August of 1970, destroying the front wall, and was rebuilt in 3 days. Any child from any of 21 nearby villages who wishes to come is permitted to attend. There are 106 children enrolled in 5 classes, classified as beginning, intermediate, and advanced. Coho, their tribal language, is taught first on the premise that if they learn that, they can understand Vietnamese better. Then, in the intermediate and advanced classes, the Vietnamese language is introduced to prepare them for elementary school, because Vietnamese is required for infants in all district schools. Arithmetic, reading, writing, and geography complete the courses that are taught. In addition, there is a session on public health taught by Phyllis once each week. Kahet has taught here since 1968. All 5 teachers are Montagnards, selected from applications on the basis of experience, motivation, and concern for their people. All this and a view too. Slide 43. Next up on my VIP tour was this leprosarium operated by the Catholic Church. As we drove in along winding uphill roads among fields, orchards, and flowers, I received an impression of rustic resort lodges. A very lovely setting. Leprosy is still superstitiously observed, and though the disease is arrested, patients are not permitted to return to their villages. So, on arrival, they and their families, who accompany them, are housed in cottages such as these. Various family services are cared for by the leprosarium administration, such as this nursery for small children. It's spotlessly clean, almost an unbelievable thing in Vietnam. I made this little baby cry. These are the kindergartners, all friends waiting especially to greet Terry. This hospital is a major unit, one half used for male patients and the other for female patients, with a small dispensary in between. I love those orange blossoms. They were absolutely gorgeous. Wished I had some. I don't know what the name of the flower is. Our guide continues the tour for a view overlooking the valley and a glimpse of their cemetery. I thought the arrangement of graves was quite unique. Here again, the rice fields, banana trees, and villages in the distance. Across that valley could be seen this residence. used as a unit house in Zilin until last May. Terry is taking me there now on a quick tour of inspection. Formerly an annex to the hotel, it was roomy, quite different from present quarters. Then last April, during a mortar attack, the women members of the unit took refuge in this shelter under these stairs, just as a mine blast exploded at this door, forcing it open and admitting hostile forces. Ted Studebaker, a personable young agriculturalist, just beginning his fourth year of service with VNCS and his first week of marriage, was shot and killed. Although discovered in the bunker, the women were unharmed. This was a dreadful tragedy for all of us in VNCS, and another evidence, we feel, of war's wastefulness and tragedy. On that same day, the brother of a Vietnamese friend of mine was also killed. So it was a day of double sorrow for me personally as well. Each morning, Phyllis Cribby sorts and prepares medicines for her public health, medical services of the day. Phyllis and I began our work here with VNCS at the same time. This time, we're headed for Kala, past this beautiful valley, with contributions to its loveliness deposited by the U.S. Army in the right foreground. Yes, on both sides of the road. Phyllis even salvaged some of the old sandbags. No use yet for the beer and Coke cans, however. Heading downhill into this really quite lovely region with very rough roads. There's not much road upkeep. Our destination is that village in the distance. This is the Kaho, name of the Montagnard tribe, village of Kala. That thatched hut by the Land Rover is where the clinic is usually held. And Phyllis begins her morning labors, assisted by Kachung, who has some training as a medical worker, and the paperwork is underway. Here, the customers line up, and the nurse goes to work. Montagnards really are an attractive people, don't you think? While Phyllis works, I wonder about the village. This woman is pounding rice. Note the pestles that they use. Playing with the puppy. That's kind of a cute one, which is the reason I took the picture, because dogs in Vietnam are downright ugly, as a rule. This is slide number 70. A rather typical dwelling, built on stilts. Some have fences for their garden plots. And at the end of that particular lane, these girls are doing the family rice. Notice the babysitter. Older children always are caring for younger ones. Grain is poured from the baskets. These, by the way, are all always hand-woven, and they're strap baskets worn over the shoulders on the back. Anyway, the grain is poured from these baskets into the pestles for pounding. Then it is put in the bamboo trays, like those in the foreground. Lift the pole high and come down hard. Now the winnowing. And once more, you repeat the process. Now, I'm receiving instructions. And oh, did I miss the hole. They really had a ball laughing at that.
decided I might as well move along and follow this trail to the village perimeter with a vista of grandeur in front of me. And I climbed back past these rows of houses and basket-bearing natives. This is the elementary school, 350 pupils, operated by the Catholic Church. There is no Hamlet school operated by the government in this particular village. Sorry, I know this is a poor picture, but I wanted to tell you about their quaint and unusual church. The interior houses some unusual hand-carved totem pole type stations of the cross. Back on the plateau to check in on the clinic progress and activities of the kids, human and otherwise. And the babysitters are still on the job. The making of a basket. These were woven items I had once handled in our mountain yard handcraft shop at the USO. In fact, Zilin was my principal source of supply, and the program was discontinued primarily because of the death of Ted and the reallocation of personnel and ability to handle the workload. Now, everyone gets involved in rice harvest. And this coffee clatch is a working one. Clinic's over, and so we leave this lovely fertile valley and observe some harvesters of hillside rice reaping their crop. Since they are a hill people, most of their rice product heretofore had been hillside rice producing. One of Ted's major demonstrations was introducing paddy rice in the lowlands to these mountain yard people. In addition to the usual VIP tour, a picnic Saturday afternoon at this delightful spot with all members of the staff. Terry and Phyllis get the meal preparations underway against a backdrop of beauty. Slide number 90. With all us supervisors sitting around, yes, that's me, under the red bandana, Phyllis readies the meat for the pot. Good canned army beef, straight from the black market for 150p a can. Between halves of French bread and gravy, it made a great picnic sandwich, believe you me. Kun Jung, Terry's interpreter assistant, and Cadet, who works for Phyllis, sorting medicines and counting out pills. Then Kuchung, Phyllis's assistant. Actually, that's a frisbee disc. Have you ever played frisbee? But we needed a plate, so Phyllis scours away. No doubt I'm asking for a little more. It's very delicious eating in beautiful surroundings. That farther pool, by the way, was the scene of the Saturday bathing of the natives au naturel. As I discovered, to their surprise as well, while seated in my midstream bower dangling my feet, thoroughly enjoying and relaxing. To climax the afternoon, we had a tour of one of the largest tea plantations in this region, noted for its tea. It's owned by a Frenchman, and it's a veritable jewel set among mountains. Here the workers pick the tiny leaves. Next stop on my personally conducted tour was this district elementary school for Montagnards. Of 1,000 applications this past year, 650 were accepted. This represents an increase of 50% in the past 2 years. Terry Bonnet is convinced the VNCS drive for education is a prime factor.
Their basic goal in this drive for education is to get the child in school by first convincing the parents of the need and the value of education, not only for children, but for adults. As a result, 9 literacy classes for adults in the different villages total 750 participants also. The drive itself is planned, organized, and conducted by 10 Montagnard teachers who devote 2 months each summer visiting some 14 different villages in the district, giving an excellent program of skits, lectures, and songs in a common meeting during the morning, discussing and evaluating the merits of education. In the afternoon, they divide into teams for house-to-house visitation. This is slide 100. Of the 650 enrolled, 200 are boarding students. Here you see the boys' dorm, complete with its wooden beds. This is the dining hall, spick and span, and ready for customers. Such a student response has necessitated this addition to the dining hall. These 5 new classrooms were erected in 1970 from UMCOR funds. UMCOR is the United Methodist Committee on Overseas Relief. While this commodious 4-stooler, compliments of BNCS, replaced an overflowing tin shack. This is the Vietnamese Tin Lan Church in Zi Linh. Tin Lan means good news and is used to denote the Protestant Evangelical Church here. The Christian and Missionary Alliance Church is the national organization, having worked in Vietnam since about 1910. Standing side by side here with the Co Ha Tin Lan Church, segregated by language as well as race. And this is where we attended on Sunday morning. These young people formed the choir, and they're great singers. They sang beautifully, performing several numbers. The young man on the end there is Kushun, and he's a PK, you know, preacher's kid, now working for Project Concern. Recorded by Phyllis, we have quite a crowd now checking out the results of sing. We even drew the attention of some small hucksters. During church, the children will get up, walk around, and leave, go out and buy food and balloons, and then return to the services. And now they are attracted to the role of listeners. This is slide 111 and is a picture of Pastor Sani, who was the preacher that morning and serves this particular church. Women sit on one side of the church and men on the other. The Tin Lan women, though, are more likely to be able to read and write than others in their village, and it's always in evidence in the response to the worship service. This is the Kaho version of the church nursery. The Montagnard women usually wear a sort of a wraparound type of skirt, and it varies in style for each tribe. The weave, the color, and the length. And also note the mode of baby transport. A more common practice, I think, is that of carrying the child on the back, knotting the sash at the breast. But I noticed this difference here in this group. Slide 114. On Sunday afternoon, we drove out to several refugee villages, such as this one at
Yalin.
And this one at Domla.
The engineers in the left foreground are conferring on the progress of the road. 2 days later, Hefroy, no progress, no engineers.
At one time, Phyllis conducted her clinic for this village in that small white building. Since then, permission has been revoked. Now she services the villagers from the Land Rover itself.
The tin roofs are used on almost all of the refugee housing. They're hotter than the thatched roofs, but they're not so attractive to vermin, and they do not have to be replaced quite so often. However, there was a point earlier when they almost assumed a status symbol proportion. You'll notice the second woman is carrying her child on her back with the blanket tied in front. I mentioned that a couple of slides back.
118. Returning from the fields is this man with his a tool on his shoulder. It's a Montagnard hoe, or as they refer to it, a shoulder axe. It's quite a utility tool. This particular man, as many others, also serves as part of the village security force.
Children at play. Here you see hopscotch and jump ropes.
There are numerous coffee plantations in this area too, such as this one. As we returned to town, Phyllis was called to the province hospital, shown here. It's a combination civil and military operation where she often refers cases and someone had need of her services. Heading on home, we had this view of their valley and the mountains, plus this view of Highlanders resting their basket loads. You'll see the T-shaped stick in use that I mentioned once before, stuck in the ground and the baskets rested on it without being unstrapped or removed. And another bus ride, this time home. Took almost an hour to flag down one that had a place to sit among all the baskets, bags, foods, children, and so forth.
Slide 125. Comfort stops en route are far from private, as evidenced here, but sometimes they're necessary on a 6 and 7 hour ride, especially if you add to that a broken down bus.
When everyone else had completed their toilet and the bus still was not functioning, I decided to take a picture during my comfort stop. Moving again now, after only 30 minutes delay, this refreshment stop, surrounded by huge boulders. They're the only ones around, and no one yet to whom I've spoken have been able to explain why. That's a military post there on top of the one at the left. This was our restaurant, plus sidewalk entrepreneurs as well. Final checkpoint outside of Saigon on the Bien Hoa Highway. Many of these along the road, you're stopped every so often, and most passengers must unload. All of the males do, but not always all the women. And they walk through the checkpoint, then reload. The bus is searched in the meantime. I made this checkpoint, the only one I got off for, but actually it's not normally required of a Westerner. Well, that is the end of my slides, and I hope you have enjoyed this visit to Zilin with me. Thank you for listening. This is Ann Scow in Saigon.
newfound ability to integrate with them, to task to integrate them with them, to understand the different aspects of himself as he sees himself. Son, master, friend, newspaper boy, the boy scout, any number of things that the child does. And his ability to integrate will determine whether he will be a complete sense of the ability, or will be. Parents, in contrast to the earlier stage, play a decidedly second role in this stage. Here's the message of hope of the American American adolescent. He says the failure to establish a clear sense of personal identity as adolescent does not stand. That it does not develop a clear sense of personal identity of an adolescent does not guarantee perfection. And contrary, a person who does have a strong sense of ego identity of an adolescent does not have a guarantee that that identity is an adolescent. And Erickson, probably more than anyone else, would emphasize that life is a constant change, and that the confronting the problems at one stage in life is no guarantee against or even a cure of these problems at this stage, nor is it a guarantee that they are a cure. But it all helps to develop the state appropriately, strongly, to guarantee that there is no real guarantee for the past state. Thank you. doesn't mean by general kidney. When a person begins to learn with others beyond even the immediate sense, it's concerned with the generation. In that sense, this feeling comes on in suddenly. You can imagine, certainly, that if you're at the stage when you're considering marriage, considering a children, you're also concerned with the future. So, that concern becomes paramount and pronounced. It's later. Well, 42 is just about that. It's about 40, 30, about 42. One more thing. When he studies the Dutch book, I'm a very old person.
Middle age, it's changed. It was, wasn't it? The final, we finally did something worth something.